Response from Noor Azria and Cherise Suturin. While there does not appear to be any reports of a West Bank terrorist shooting into a girl's room, this may be a reference to a 2016 incident in which a 13-year-old girl who was asleep was stabbed to death in her bedroom by a Palestinian.
My point being is that we are fighting an existential war right now.
But are you at war with the West Bank?
We are at war with terrorists on the West Bank that are waiting and are actually preparing to explode car bombs inside Israel. And we've been able to stop that on several cases, several occasions. So sometimes, you know, there is this Israeli satiric, Ephraim Kishon, who said at some point, we'll only have the sympathy of the world once they throw us into the sea. Then we'll have the sympathy. Listen, guy, I have to tell you something. You have to remember that on the West Bank, there is no real authority. There is no government. There is no real policing. There is no real serious security enforcement agency that does anything. And so we have to do it.
Response from Noor Azria and Cherise Suturin. The governance of the West Bank is a complex shared responsibility between the Palestinian Authority and Israel due to Israel's settlements there. According to the U.S. Department of State's summary of Oslo Accords, the West Bank is divided into three areas. Quote, the Palestinian Authority has formal responsibility for security in Area A, but Israeli security forces frequently conducted security operations there. The Palestinian Authority maintains administrative control, and Israel maintains security control of Area B in the West Bank. Israel retains full security control of Area C and has designated most Area C land as either closed military zones or settlement zoning areas, end quote. However, the division of control remains a contentious issue between the two governments.
We would have loved the Palestinians to do that. You know that Palestinians and Israelis used to do together security patrols until Palestinians started shooting their Israeli counterparts. Then it stopped. So when you have to, if you have this kind of an idea that, you know, it's just because Israeli government's policy that Palestinians turn against Israel, you have to think twice. When you look at the school books, somebody your age, when he went to kindergarten, what he did was walk over an Israeli flag. And on his whatever holiday that he had a costume, he would take a rifle and say, I'm going to be a Shaheed. And every mother would tell him, I wish you were a Shaheed. And I will sacrifice you. And this is the environment where they grow in.
Response from Noor Azria and Cherise Suturin. This story is unsubstantiated and suggests that Palestinians glorify martyrdom, which is a discriminatory trope. Further, some Palestinian experts interpret the word Shaheed as witness, not martyr.
So you cannot be surprised that nowadays on the Palestinian side, there are no people, no real leaders who will say, we want to live in peace with Israel. And you will say, yes, but it's because Israel's policy. Well, we've been at a different place.
Don't assume you know what I'll say.
No, but the public. And so the issue that we are looking at is something very, very significant. Blaming the Israeli government for the Palestinians' attack against Israel is a little bit far-fetched when you understand that where they come from is, and you look at the concentration of terrorism cells and you see the motivation and you see the preachers and you see what's happening on universities on the West Bank, you understand that they are the motivation of a very big group of the population is not to allow Israel to exist.
I don't think that my questions blamed Israel for that at all. I think my questions were of the nature of why is Israel escalating in an area where it has been warned that it will be degrading and staining the reputation of Jews around the world, and it will be prompting a third intifada if it continues, an intifada that will affect people around the world. And this takes me to this question, because you say that Israel relies on the support of Canadians and Canadian Jews specifically. Is that support a blank check?
Never a blank check. There is no blank check here. There is an agreement between Israel and diaspora. That agreement says Israel is the safe home of the Jewish people around the world. People in diaspora, you do whatever you can to support the state of Israel. You'll go and visit, you'll send your kids to study there. But if your Jewish identity is such, you see that Israel is a part of your life and part of your identity, and you find your way to connect with that country. So there is a sort of a link. We don't take anything for granted. We don't take any donation for granted. We don't take Israel for granted. We don't take our borders for granted. We don't take anything for granted. We fought for everything we had because this is our ancestral land, and this is the land that belongs to the Jewish people. So, no, there is no blank check, but there is also another part of it, and that's the Jewish community also around the world would have some criticism about what's going on in Israel. And some people in Israel will say, well, if they're not living here, they don't have a right to have that criticism. This is another reason why I'm here.
Do you agree with that?
I'm here to take that criticism, to engage in that discussion, to convey to Israel, to make people understand in Israel that the Jewish community's concerns about Israel, whether it's politically, the judicial reforms, or it's security-wise because of the war, that all of that is conveyed to Israel. That's the part of the deal. So it's a two-way thing.
In Israel, it is possible for hundreds of thousands of people to take to the streets and demand an end to the war in Gaza, to demand an end to your current government. There is a difference between Israel and the Israeli government. Nobody accuses those Israelis of being anti-Zionist. They are Zionists against Netanyahu. Some of them are Zionists against the war. How long before you see a similar movement around the world? I can't imagine Jews around the world turning their backs on Israel. This is where our families live. It would be like saying that your mother shouldn't live in her home. But support for the Netanyahu government among Jews around the world and among Jews in Canada is demonstrably declining. How long before that distinction becomes an important one to people who no longer wish to bear the brunt or be blamed for what the Netanyahu government is doing?
I haven't seen any Jew, any organization, any movement that stands up now for the Jewish community saying anything about their support for the Netanyahu government. They all say just three words. Am Israel Chai. You know what that means.
It means the people.
The people of Israel live. Because they all understand that the situation that we are at right now is existential for the Jewish people. So the internal strife that exists in Israel between those who support the government and those who don't, between those who want the release of the hostages immediately now with any kind of a deal and those who say, no, let's wait, that does not resonate anywhere among the Jewish communities around the world because for them it's different. For them, it's an existential battle that Israel is waging and they're waging. Oh, there is a war going on here in Canada as well. For the Jewish communities, they feel that they are under war. And just last Holocaust Remembrance Day, I remember a Jewish grandmother saying her grandson wanted to go to Israel to fight. She said, no, you should stay here. You have a war to fight here. And that's anti-Semitism. So the distinction is not made here. When it comes to the Jewish people, the homeland of the Jewish people being attacked on seven fronts, I think that all of us want just one thing, to make sure that Am Yisrael Chai, nothing beyond that. I'm sure the time will come when people will voice their disagreement with the government and say, and some among the Jewish community will say he should go and some will say he should stay.
You're saying this is an internal conversation for us to have in private. Our internal private conversations are being dragged out into the open. Our identities are being dragged out into the public square. I think there was a time when Jews in the diaspora did not feel entitled to be as critical about Israeli policy. But when Israeli policy is meeting us at our doorsteps, I think that there's a right to have this conversation out in the open. And I think that to demand solidarity until we get through this, well, I don't know when this ends.
I'm not demanding anything. And I invite everybody and anybody to be critical and to voice it. I'm here, as I said, I'm open to engage in every kind of conversation. There is nothing private about it. I'm just saying that what I'm experiencing is the overall overriding majority of the Jewish people, communities, individuals I'm meeting only want to make one thing sure, and that is that Am Yisrael Chai, that the people of Israel live, that the state of Israel will continue to thrive. They are not in now to speak about this government or another government.
I've asked about Jewish Canadians. I want to ask about some other Canadians. There are Palestinian Canadians, and they're worried about their families. And a Canadian value, I think, that is very commonly held is that this is a safe place for people in trouble. And I think it's that principle that guided our government in declaring that they would issue 5,000 visas to Gazans to get them out of trouble, to get them out of harm's way. But in order for them to actually get those visas, they have to get entrance to Egypt for security clearance. They can't get out because Israel won't let them. COGAT, the Coordination of Government Activities in the Territories, will not allow them passage so that they could come to Canada and be reunited with their families and get away from this war. Why won't you let those Gazans go into Egypt for security clearance so that their lives could be saved?
We'll have to check your data, because with the Minister of Immigration here, they'll tell you that a few hundred already left.
Response from Noor Azria and Cherise Suturin. A recent Canada Land episode on Canada's plan to issue 5,000 visas to Gazans reported that data from the Canadian government and expert lawyers show that Israel has not let a single person leave Gaza through the program that was set up in January 2024. According to a spokesperson at Global Affairs Canada, quote, Israel has agreed to Canada's request to facilitate the exit of extended family members in Gaza as part of their expanding humanitarian efforts, end quote. The most recent reports reflect that has not yet happened. Moed might have been referring to the several hundred people who left through, quote-unquote, facilitation or bribes, but this is not Canada's official process.
You'll have to mention, when you ask the question, that the crossing, the Rafah crossing, is being shut completely. They're not Canadians, by the way. They're Palestinians that may have direct...
Families here.
But they are not specifically targeted. There is nothing against Canada or Canadians or Palestinians in that sense. The only thing we know is that the Rafah crossing was used by Hamas to smuggle in weapons and maybe smuggle hostages or others out. So until we find a solution for this issue, how we maintain this crossing, it's closed.
Well, there are Canadians in Lebanon, tens of thousands of them. And Melanie Jolie has asked Israel for a temporary ceasefire. You said no.
There was an overriding request from countries around the world that there should be a ceasefire. That's what she said in the United Nations. We understand that. We respect that. And our response is that we cannot ceasefire while Hezbollah is continuing to fight rockets and missiles into Israel without discrimination into civilian populated areas. We have a war to fight against this organization that has been there, that has been building up for years, for tens of years, for one purpose only, to be able to deter Israel from attacking Iran. They have been shooting into Israel. They have killed 48 Israelis up until now, including 12 children playing football, soccer, in Majd al-Shams. They have been destroying hundreds and hundreds of homes. They have been shooting indiscriminately into Israel, and they continue to threaten the north of Israel.
So
Israel...
They is Hezbollah.
Israel, yes.
They is not the Lebanese people. It's not the Christian Lebanese.
If I may finish...
Yes?
Israel's objective, fourth objective in this war, is to make sure that the inhabitants of the northern part of Israel can return safely to their homes. And that is not possible as long as Hezbollah continues to shoot directly and destroy those homes. And so we will not cease until that goal has been reached. We have no business in conquering Lebanon or doing anything beside to make sure to take away that threat. And if you ask about the Lebanese government, I would ask you where there has been Canada or the Lebanese government or the United Nations for 20-something years about implementing Security Council Resolution 1701 and 1559, which call for the retreat of all these militias, Hezbollah, and the disarming of this whole perimeter or this whole strip of land to the northern part of the border for 10 kilometers. Where were the calls for ceasefire when Hezbollah killed 12 children? Where were the calls for ceasefire when Hezbollah on October the 8th voluntarily decided to attack Israel? Out of their own will. There was no provocation. There was nothing there. We have actually retreated into the international borderline many years ago, as acknowledged by the United Nations, but there is no mention of that.
Response from Noor Azria and Cherise Suturin. The UN Secretary General has reported violations of Resolution 1701 by both sides. The United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon FAQ page said, quote, any unauthorized crossing of the blue line by land or by air from any side constitutes a violation of Security Council Resolution 1701, end quote. Israel first invaded Lebanon during its civil war in 1978 and again in 1982, maintaining an occupation in southern Lebanon until 2000, when it announced its withdrawal. To mark this withdrawal, the United Nations established the quote-unquote blue line, a border demarcation intended to confirm that Israeli forces had fully left Lebanese territory. However, while the UN certified the withdrawal, Lebanon disputed the blue line, arguing that the Sheba Farms area was part of its own territory, not the Syrian Golan Heights, which Israel continues to occupy. An Al Jazeera article explains, quote, there are two separate issues here that lead to the current dispute. The first is that Israel occupies the Golan Heights and treats it as its own territory in violation of international law. And the second is that there was already a pre-existing disagreement between Syria and Lebanon over the border prior to the Israeli occupation, end quote.
So only when there is some kind of this double standard, Israel is all of a sudden asked to cease fire. So if we stop fire, it will only mean that Hezbollah can rearm themselves and continue to shoot into Israel. It would make no sense. Hezbollah is not a member of the United Nations. Hezbollah will not go to court. There is no policeman that come to Hezbollah and tell them, listen, there is an agreement, stop firing. They don't care about agreements. So when we are under attack, why should we cease fire? What sense would it make if somebody attacks you and he'll tell you, let's have a ceasefire? Would you agree?
This is a terrible situation. It's a terrible situation, and it's a complicated situation. But if the question is, what, if anything, is Israel doing to help or allow Canadians in Lebanon exit amid this terrible situation, I think the answer is nothing is being done.
What would you expect me to tell you? There is nothing that Israel does at the moment to inhibit anybody from leaving the country.
Response from Nur Azria and Shariz Suturin. Lebanese people are being prevented from leaving the country via the border crossing. Quote, Israel carried out another series of punishing airstrikes Friday, hitting suburban Beirut and cutting off the main border crossing between Lebanon and Syria for tens of thousands of people fleeing the Israeli bombardment of the Hezbollah militant group. End quote. Reads an AP article. Also, The Guardian reports that, quote, their bombing has resulted in a suspension of many flights out of the country. End quote.
Foreign interference has been a huge issue in Canada this past year, and on almost a daily basis, when I report about anti-Semitism, I face an allegation, well, obviously you work for Israel. Obviously you're a conspirator, a collaborator with the Israeli state. I'm accused of being some sort of a secret agent, and it's also evokes an anti-Semitic trope that Jews control the media and conspire with each other. When your office reached out, I was told that you would welcome a chance to meet with me to discuss collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Ambassador, I'm accused of being an Israeli collaborator every day. I responded instead, I said, let's have an interview. If I had responded, I would love to collaborate with Israel, what would have happened next?
The collaboration is regarding having an opportunity to talk with us and to hear our opinion. That's kind of collaboration. If that's collaboration, then you're guilty. But that's where it ends. There is nothing else behind that. And the idea is...
Please be careful. I don't think you understand.
No.
If it was true that I agreed to collaborate with Israel, that's it.
I don't think that... I mean, we never met before, and there is nothing behind it. The whole point is really that we want to bring our points across. We want people to listen, to ask us tough questions, sometimes questions that are border-like, fair or not, but that's the way it is. It's up to you. That's the whole point. Nothing beyond that.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you very much.
Thank you.
A quick note before we go. My colleagues, Shariz Suturin and Nur Azria, have written a fact-check companion piece to this interview, adding context to much of what was discussed. You can read that now on our website, canadaland.com. That's your Canada Land episode for this Monday. I hope you enjoyed it. Join us tomorrow on our politics edition right here, where host Nur Azria looks at Canada's military. Does it matter that we barely have one? Look, if you want to talk to me about what you heard today, you can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything that you send. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Sam Connert lended an extra set of hands to production this week. Max Collins is our production manager. Our theme music is by So-Called. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by supporters Samson Graham, Jane Hope, and Jack Denham. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. You can listen to Canada Land ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
You touched me. Like a phantom. Now that's just the ghost of my old self you slayed.
Yeah. aware of the challenges our online spaces present, like online hate and the spread of misinformation. But how can the average person make our online world more positive? Studies have shown it takes just 10% of the people in a community to set its values. We're all digital citizens, and we all have a role to play. Join Media Smarts, Canada's Centre for Digital Media Literacy, on October 23rd for Digital Citizen Day to help make our online world a better place to be. Visit digitalcitizenday.ca to find out how you can make a difference.